May it please the court. My name is David Hargett. I represent Mr. Burton on the appeal out of Prince William County. I would like to reserve, although I don't think I'll need it, 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All right, that'll be fine.
The case before the court is the issue. There's only one issue here. It's fairly straightforward, and that has to do with the probable cause to search the vehicle, and then, of course, the contraband that was discovered upon the search of the defendant's person, but pursuant to the fact that he had to get out of the car so that they could search the vehicle.
And well, analytically, this case is kind of a train wreck because I think I've observed to both my colleagues that, you know, I've been on this court long enough now to see a lot of both judges and lawyers use the terms reasonable suspicion and probable cause interchangeably when they are not interchangeable. Those phrases are analytically different. Here we've got a trooper who, with a super sense of, you know, super olfactory sense, who smells marijuana. That is a fact that was accepted by the trial court. Whether I would have, you know, found that credible or not is not my call. It's a fact that we're stuck with. Given that alone, it seems to me that's probable cause to search the trunk of that car. That would be the scope of the search, assuming probable cause existed based on what the officer testified, the trooper testified to, as to where the smell of the marijuana was coming from. Now, clearly, while that search was going on, she could detain your client, you know, not let him run away, you know, freeze the scene, if you will, while that search is ongoing. But analytically, a search of his person would require that he either be arrested, there be a search conducted incident to the arrest, or there be independent probable cause that would suggest that evidence of a crime can be found upon his person, or we've got a Terry versus Ohio situation where there's reasonable suspicion of criminal activity and he's being detained while that is being investigated. And by the way, if there's evidence that he might be armed or might destroy evidence or tamper with evidence, he can also be patted down. Do you have any disagree with anything I've said so far?
Partly I do.
Okay.
part of it that I have a problem with is the Terry detention was not really what happened here. I mean, what clearly happened here is that it was I believe they even described it as a safety issue, simply because his car was being searched. In other words, they had no real reason to detain him otherwise, and there was no detention really anyway. It was just simply asking him out of the car and then doing a pat down.
You'd agree, I would hope you would agree, that under the circumstances of taking the evidence light most favorable to the Commonwealth, he wasn't free to leave under any, you know, until somebody got the bottom of where the smell of the marijuana was coming from. Would you agree with that much, at least?
Assuming that they had probable cause to search the car in the first place, then he would not have been free to leave. That's right. Correct.
Now, the next question, though, is whether they could pat him down.
Correct. But the motion to suppress was based solely upon the search, and then the subsequent pat down was the fruit of the poisonous tree.
Well, and so your assignment of error does not challenge. You just conceded it wasn't argued below, and your assignment of error does not challenge the pat down per se. It just, if there was probable cause to search the vehicle and get him out of the vehicle, then everything else is kosher.
Because the argument had not been raised below, it has not been raised in this appeal either. That's correct.
That clarifies my question.
Yes. And unfortunately, that leaves me with the argument that there was no probable cause. And I go back to what the court had said before, which had to do with, well, this officer could smell marijuana. And it's certainly possible the officer could smell marijuana. And the probable cause determination is made de novo, although we do look at the findings of fact under the clear error standard, essentially.
Well, the fact, forget the law for a moment. The fact is the officer said, I smelled marijuana. I know what the smell of marijuana is based on experience, training, whatever. I smell marijuana. And by the way, I also know it's coming from the trunk of that car right over there. Now, a fact finder could say, oh, nonsense. Nobody has that good of a sense of smell. unless you're a bloodhound or something. Or, as here, could have said, I believe everything you just said. We're stuck with the fact that the officer has that enhanced sense of smell, the trooper has that enhanced sense of smell, and that it was, in fact, believed to be, in her, at least in her mind, marijuana. Now, why isn't that probable cause, given that it's a vehicle, which, of course, is an exception to the warrant requirement under the Carroll Doctrine, so she doesn't have to go get a warrant if there's probable cause, it's exigent circumstances. Why isn't that the end of the legal analysis?
Well, because the totality, you need to look at the totality of the circumstances. So she does essentially say, I smelled marijuana that I believed was coming from that trunk of that car. This is a parking lot. There are multiple cars. There's even testimony from her that there's a car directly adjacent to.
But you don't have to be right. In other words, it's a probability analysis. That's why it's called probable cause. It's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, if I think you've got marijuana in your pocket from sitting way up here and somebody believes that, you know, that's, until I'm proven wrong, that's, you know, somebody, at least somebody, in this case the fact that the trial court believed that was reasonable to look into. So,
well, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that, because the way this has been phrased is the plain smell doctrine. And we have to think about that for a second. First of all,
let me ask you a question about that, because in your brief you say apparently Virginia has adopted the plain smell doctrine. And you cite then Judge Kelsey's decision. I think he would be offended at apparently. I think he thinks he was pretty clear that Virginia has adopted plain smell. Do you have any other than that case, do you have anything to suggest that we haven't?
I think that, first of all, calling it that is problematic, and I'll get to that in a moment. But I also think that the Virginia Supreme Court has the ultimate answer on whether or not we will adopt a plain smell doctrine, if you will.
Are we just a way station? Because we're bound by the intrapanel doctrine by that case, aren't we?
No, yes, you are, unless there's a distinguishing factor. And here I think there is as well. But we can also get to that as well. So, but I have no other option other than to raise it now in order to carry it on to the Supreme Court as well.
I just want to make sure that's why you were doing it.
Right. I mean, I have no other option. I have to phrase it at least to some extent that the plain smell doctrine is not necessarily something the Commonwealth has adopted. But I kind of need to get back to the point of the plain smell doctrine, because what it basically says is you could smell something and then therefore you know what it is, essentially, right? Well, we could talk about plain sight doctrine. The interesting thing about the difference is you can look and see where something is. So observing what it is, maybe there might be some...
I don't think that's the right analysis at all, with all due respect. I think, and I'm not going to opine as to Judge Kelsey's opinion, but it seems to me the plain view doctrine is based on the Katz analysis of you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy in that which you put out there in plain view for anybody walking by in a public place or a place where they have a right to be to see. That's not necessarily the case when you've got it locked in the trunk of a car and it happens to emanate an odor that someone with enhanced senses can smell. That doesn't necessarily negate any reasonable expectation of privacy. It may well, and I don't know that the law necessarily restricts that only the sense of sight, you know, versus the sense of hearing or the sense of touch or whatever else, you know, can be involved in a Fourth Amendment analysis. But I think the correct way to approach, quite honestly, is based on the reasonable expectation of privacy and whether that exists where you've put something in plain view. If you put an apple pie out on the window ledge to cool and everybody walking down the sidewalk can smell it, even though there's a hedge in between and they can't see it, I think it's reasonable that you're not expecting that people not to, you know, notice that apple pie as you're walking by. So, I mean, I think that's the analogy that works here, with all due respect.
Well, no, and I'm not disputing that. I mean, I totally agree. I think that one of the components of the plain smell doctrine is that you do not have a reasonable expectation of privacy to your odor. That I agree with. I do not disagree with that. Where I disagree is on it being enough in and of itself, standing alone, with no other corroborating factors, to support probable cause. So you have to then look at what other additional language is there. And so when you're trying to determine the location of a smell, and that's what some of these cases talk about, is localizing it. The difficulty that you have here is that smell can go all over the place. It's really hard to pinpoint a smell, unlike the plain sight doctrine.
Except that here the trooper testified the smell is coming from there, and you know that car, and that was accepted as a fact. And so you know, for it seems to me for us to go a different way and say we would have to say that's incredible as a matter of law.
Well, I don't agree. I don't think that it was accepted for a fact that it was coming from that car. I think that it was accepted for a fact that she said that. So those are different things. But you have to look at it under the totality of the circumstances.
Well, right, but if she said that, and we are reviewing the historical facts in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth at this point, isn't that the same thing as it being a fact?
No. And
she said, quote, literally stopped in my tracks with the odor that was coming from this vehicle. I could identify it based on my experience and knowledge as the odor that was associated with marijuana. Close quotes, Joint Appendix 17. I mean, the trial court obviously accepted that as a fact. I might have been, quite honestly, very skeptical about that, not necessarily found that to be credible. Nonetheless, the trial court did, and that's what we have. And so the question is, given that fact, as the trooper just testified, would that provide probable cause to conduct a search of an automobile at a rest area without a warrant?
And the answer has to be, under this case, no. And the reason I have to argue that is because that's the only argument that was presented. Just like this court may have viewed it differently.
Mr. Hargan, you're a very good attorney, and we understand that.
I certainly would have argued it differently if I had the case. But that's not the point. The point is that the question is the smell alone enough to establish probable cause? So even if the court does accept it as a fact, he does not have to accept that that is probable cause standing alone. There are a couple of factors I think that I would like to briefly point out to the court. One is there was an adjacent car. Two is the trunk was not open of the defendant's car, correct?
Right.
So if the trunk is open or a window is open and smoke is billowing out, that's a different scenario. When asked about the car adjacent to it, whether that trunk was open, her answer was, I don't know. I didn't pay any attention to the car. So she doesn't even know if the trunk was open. There are no other corroborating factors. There's no evidence that there was any marijuana being burned or anything along those lines. As a matter of fact, this particular officer, although declared an expert, said that there was no difference between the smell of burnt marijuana and unburnt marijuana or raw marijuana. So you got to look at all those factors under the totality of the circumstances. And the argument here is, considering all the factors, the fact that there's nothing else, this standing alone, based on the totality of the circumstances, is not sufficient for probable cause.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hargett. I'll give you the 2 minutes in rebuttal.
Go ahead. Not really raised by the parties, and in fact, it couldn't come up until your client testified at trial. He's moving to suppress things seized from his person, but he claims that nothing was seized from his person. Nothing was seized at the scene. The drugs magically appeared when he was in front of the magistrate. Doesn't that create a standing problem for him to seek suppression of the objects that he claims weren't his, weren't taken from his person, didn't exist anywhere near him?
I don't think that his own testimony would diminish his ability to have standing to challenge the constitutionality of the search of his car.
It's not the search of his car at this point.
I understand that, but I also think that it's the fruit of the poisonous tree. And I don't think that his own, say, those aren't my drugs, diminishes his ability to have standing to challenge the constitutionality.
Not just those aren't my drugs. Those drugs weren't anywhere on me.
I understand. And I'm not aware of any case law that touches upon that directly, but that's, of course, not the argument that was made below.
I hope you'll still give me the 2 minutes.
I will give you the 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Kieran.
Good morning.
You're thanking your lucky stars that none of the really good arguments were made below, because otherwise I think the comment would be in a lot of trouble here.
Yes, Your Honor. However, on the record that we have, the way this case was presented and the way it comes before the court, I think we're on all fours with Bunch here. And if you want to look outside this court's jurisprudence, the Fourth Circuit has unequivocally held that the detection of odors associated with contraband standing alone without anything else coming from a car, coming from a person, coming from a house, gives rise to probable cause. And to the extent that's the issue before this court, I think it's well settled in Virginia as well as in the Fourth Circuit that gives the officer probable cause.
Well, Mr. Hargett's arguing fruit of the poisonous tree, basically, here. He can't get there from here unless there's a problem with the search. Do you have any response to his argument that the officer's testimony of the smell of marijuana associated with this vehicle is not enough? Her testimony is not enough to establish, I guess it would be the scope of what the probable cause would permit to be searched based solely on that testimony that I quoted from her.
I understand you'd be asking, her testimony credible?
I think I probably confused both of us while I was trying to ask that question, but where I'm going is, the Fourth Amendment, fundamental Fourth Amendment jurisprudence is, you could only search within the scope. If you have a warrant, you have to stay within the scope of that warrant, the place to be searched, the thing to be seized, and that sort of thing. When you have a warrantless search, the principle is basically the same. It's just you don't have a piece of paper that limits you. What you have is the limitation by the factual probable cause that exists. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Hargett's position, as I understand it, is essentially the fruit of the poisonous tree as far as the pat down is concerned, because the officer never should have been permitted to go in that trunk in the first place based on what she knew at that time. Mm-hmm. And I guess the point is, okay, accepting that she can recognize smell that she might believe would be associated with marijuana, how do you get from her testimony to what she actually did as far as conducting the search?
I think there's testimony at trial as well as in the suppression motion that they never got that far, that the defendant was removed from the vehicle and was patted down for officer security purposes in preparation to conduct that search. And she very specifically testified, as the court has noticed, that it was coming from the rear quarter panel on the driver's side door of the trunk. And I agree with Your Honor that the probable cause to search would be limited in scope, but that
Mr. Hargett's argument should have been the probable cause to search didn't extend to his client, and therefore the scope of the probable cause here was exceeded.
Certainly, Arna, and I think it was candidly acknowledged that was not an argument made below. However, the defendant was not searched in the sense that would have required probable cause. His waistband was patted down for weapons, and officer
somebody went in and pulled
down.
Out this. What was in the waistband that turned out?
It was a brick of cocaine in his waistband in a place where a firearm may normally be stored.
Where I come from, we call that a search.
I think that what happened here was not as invasive as a search. It was pat down. It was a weapons pat down. And again, it hasn't been challenged. However, we don't have him reaching into a pocket. We don't have him picking out like pieces or packages of individually packaged wrappers of cocaine or something. This was a brick on his waistband where a firearm would have been kept. This is more akin to Terry Frisco, as the court was talking about originally. This is not a search of the defendant's person, which would be my argument if it was, in fact, argued below. But that wasn't something.
Well, you don't want to go down that road because...
No, you're right.
Under Terry, you don't just pat down people like just because you want to talk to them. There has to be some indicia that they're armed or there's an officer safety issue or something. You can't just do it because you feel like it.
Sure. And as we suggested in the brief, there's a strong correlation between drugs and guns. This officer was stopped in her tracks by the smell of marijuana. Presumably, she believed there were large amounts of marijuana in this vehicle. She testified at trial that 95 is a drug corridor and that, he's driving a rental vehicle. So to the extent that she believes that he's in possession of a large amount of marijuana coming from out of state, it's reasonable for her to believe that he may be armed and dangerous. And if she had probable cause to believe there were drugs in the trunk, she certainly had reasonable suspicion to believe there was criminal activity, but not to conflate the concepts as the court has asked us to. However, on the facts of this case, as it comes before you, I think the trial court was correct, and I would ask you to affirm.
Thank you. Mr. Hargett, you've got 2 minutes.
I don't have much more to say, Your Honor, other than the fact that given the changing the laws, marijuana laws, and the fact that there will be smells that will be legal, potentially legal smells, I think you have the situation here where simply smelling, detecting an odor of marijuana is not enough to search a car that you think it's coming from. She didn't do anything other than walk around the car. That's pretty much all she did. And she's even asked, and one particular fact that I had pointed out in the brief, is she's asked, well, did you even lean over into the car or bend down and smell the trunk? And her answer was, no, I did not do that. So I think that, you know, given the vague circumstances of the where the smell might be coming from, in order to establish probable cause, there needs to be a little bit more than I believe it's coming from over there.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, with that, we'll come down to Greek Council and then